Interview with Barb Dvorak on September 20th, 2015. All right. So, Barb, let's talk about your job.
My favorite topic.
Your favorite topic. We'll start easy. What's your title at work?
You don't know how hard that question is. I have a very silly title, and honestly, I have to look it up because it's I think it is Global Clinical Affairs. No, that's not how it starts.
It sounds impressive.
It has in it quality control and PM manager, which means project management manager. That's all part of my title. I don't know what the beginning part is. I honestly have to look it up. Clinical quality control and PM manager.
Ah. Not global.
Well, I'm part of the global clinical affairs team.
Oh.
I don't think the global part is in my title.
Okay. What does it mean, global clinical affairs team? What do they do? What are the responsibilities of that team?
Our team is responsible for conducting studies, generally safety or efficacy studies for the products that we make. And the global part would imply worldwide. We don't really have as much global influence as we would like. So vast majority of our stuff is in the US. However, we do some things internationally on occasion.
The studies are done internationally?
Yeah, they're also to support international businesses.
Got it. And when you say for the products that you make, the products within the clinical division or within, or is it company-wide?
Company-wide. Okay. Kimberly-Clark products.
Okay. And for yourself, what are the range of your responsibilities? Describe this kind of the scope of your job.
I am responsible for the team, the overall design of the studies. That doesn't mean that I do that myself, but at the end of the day, if we conduct a study that was designed improperly, that would be on my shoulders. So the design and the execution of those studies, and we're kind of responsible on the business, the internal business side. So we have different business units within KC that are aligned with the brands that we produce. So there's our adult feminine care group, which produces our incontinence products, as well as the feminine care products. So the brands are Poise and Depend and Kotex are generally those three. And then there's another division that's called our baby and child care, and that's our Huggies brand, Little Swimmers, Good Nights. And then we have our family care business unit, which is Kleenex, Cottonelle, Viva, Scott, those kinds of products that are made for the family. Mm. And then we have other international brands as well, and KC Professional, which is what we call our business-to-business. So when you go into any sort of public place and you see Kimberly-Clark paper towel dispensers, that type of thing, that's our KC Professional group.
Yeah. My favorite ones are the ones that sit on top of the counter in those.
And you pull out the paper.
Those seem like the best paper towels. The least... problematic dispensers.
Yes, because they're in a box.
Yeah.
Just pull them out like a Kleenex.
It's nice and simple.
Yep. Don't have to wave your hands.
Right. Exactly. You just get to pull it. And they don't even get the one below it wet somehow.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So I like those.
Yeah.
So when you say, responsible for the design of studies, is that like... what's going to be tested, like what needs to be tested, is defining like all that kind of stuff, how many people, what, you know, how it's going to work out.
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces. So we drill down to what is the objective of the study to begin with? Is it because we want to know some sort of safety information about the product? Is it because we want to make a certain claim about the product? Is it because we need to generate some data to go to a regulatory agency like the FDA and provide them with information in order to get the product on the market? So there can be just lots and lots of different reasons for doing this study. So we look at what the objective is, and then how do we design the study to meet that objective? How many people do we need? What do those people need to, what does that population look like? So let's take, you know, like incontinence, for example. Are we looking at men or women? If we're looking at women, what age ranges are we looking at? What degree of incontinence do they need to have? Where in what, you know, geographical location, is that important or not? Then it goes, you know, kind of from who we're going to do the study on to what does the study look like? What is it that we're measuring? How do we put a measure to whatever it is that we're looking at? What do those endpoints look like? How many people do we need? All of the logistics for how do we gather that information? Are they going to use the product at home? Are they going to use it in a medical facility? Are they going to do a daily diary and use it for 2 weeks? Is it going to be a one-time use? Are we asking them to do something in particular, like, you know, go and exercise while you're using this product? Or so all of those pieces and components, and then understanding how we're going to analyze the data at the end of it all to get the answers that they need. And yeah, that's about all of it.
Wow. So do you do this for both new and existing products? When you said it might be because somebody wants to make a particular claim, does that mean that it, like in advertising or somewhere, they're like, mm-hmm. hey, we want to be able to do this. And then it has to go through and be approved.
Yes. Many of our studies involve actually a combination of new and existing products. So that's another piece of the design, is to compare how is this product improved over the current. Sometimes we also are just using existing products because we want to say something new or different about it. And then there's always sort of this, you know, our existing products are really continuously being changed. So there might be some modification. We're changing this particular material, that particular material. So while it's not like a brand new product, we go back and do different testing, you know, based on what those material changes are or design changes are. So, yes, it'll be a combination of sometimes new and existing.
Got it. And so your customers then come from all over the rest of the company?
Right. Our customers are researchers or marketing folks that are from each of those business units that I talked about.
Got it. And they all of these kinds of things go through you guys then? Like for
No. So within our company, this is actually kind of an area that we're at. The management side of our team is really trying to work on a little bit more, is what's in our scope versus what's in somebody else's scope. Because we have four different teams that do testing internally. So understanding when does it come through our team versus another team is has been kind of a challenging thing. Our team tends to do the higher risk, and even in comparison to other companies, it's not high risk stuff. But within our company itself, like, we do almost no research on like toilet paper. But we do occasionally, if it's something very new or novel, then we will do those. So we tend to do more research for the feminine care group, where there are class 2 medical devices. And we have to do them under certain regulations, do the testing under certain regulations. We have a couple of other teams, as I mentioned, that does testing. One is really focused on the consumer and what the consumer's experience is. So more, and you know, if they're going to buy this product off the shelf, how do they interact with it? They like very little interaction at all, from, you know, no real procedures, just kind of go use the product like you would if you were buying it off the shelf. That's our market research group. Then we have another group that is really about functionality of the product. And we have a lot of products that are designed to contain fluids of some sort. And so, for example, they do a lot of studies where they look at whether or not these products leak, and they have kind of standard protocols for how they do that. And then we have a product safety group who does standard safety testing. That is common, standard protocols for certain types of safety testing, where it's, you know, to see if something causes irritation or not. And then we have our group who does sort of non-standard safety testing. So something that doesn't fall into those standard protocols, where we have to design a whole protocol around it. Those things will tend to fall into our camp, or studies where we need medical expertise, or studies where we have to follow certain regulations. Mm-hmm. So those are the studies that we handle.
Got it. When you talked about the market research and the stuff that, kind of getting people to use the product as they would, so not your team, but the, whatever mm-hmm. team that is that where like the diaper testing happens?
Or? Any of the testing can happen across any of those four groups.
Got it.
So, a lot of the diaper testing and diaper functionality goes through this group called Innovation Testing, and that's where they test the functionality piece. If it's, again, about whether we always talk in terms of moms, which is unfortunate, but the fact of the matter is it's still moms who are purchasing a lot of those things, and so it tends to be in our vernacular that we say, oh, how does mom feel about this, and that type of thing would be through the market research group. We have been focused very heavily on doing diaper testing in hospitals recently. That's been our team. Those other teams don't have any experience in kind of the medical arena, and quite frankly, we don't have much more than they do in this area. We have not done a lot of hospital testing, but it's a much more complicated process. So while the information we're trying to gather is very similar to what we would do in home studies, we're trying to get this information from nurses and in their busy lives. And, you know, it's not an easy kind of task to do diaper studies in a hospital. But we have spent a lot of time in trying to get there.
Hmm. Interesting. And do they do, part of the reason I know about diaper testing is just from growing up in the Fox Valley babysitting. Mm-hmm. It seemed like, you know, a lot of the families I babysat for did diaper testing.
Yeah.
Do they do it in other cities and stuff? Does it happen to be because that's where we are?
Part of it is that's where we live. They certainly do diaper testing in other cities, not in the same capacity. So when we do diaper testing here in Neenah in Wisconsin, the advantage of doing it here is the research teams are actually physically here as well. And so they can kind of interact with people who are in those studies firsthand. They can be present in the room and, you know, looking at what happens when a kid is, you know, playing around and after they've been wearing a diaper for a certain period of time. So the advantage of doing that diaper testing in the Valley is that they can be really present and kind of they get a lot out of that experience. Mm-hmm. When we do it in other cities, it's more just about the data, not about observations in and of mm-hmm. themselves.
I think it's fascinating. I think it would be interesting to see if you compared how much people spend of their household income on diapers in Appleton, Neenah, Menasha compared to others. Like, would the number actually go down?
It might.
Like, they have to actually throw off the average.
Yeah.
So if you do these studies for all these different types of things, for like, it sounds like a pretty wide range, does that mean that you have to know a lot about various guidelines from different perspectives, like medical or FDA guidelines or something, or back to the advertising thing of what you can, like, do you have to know a lot about all kinds of different kinds of regulations or guidelines or things, or how does...
We do. Yes, we definitely do. I think that's, at the end of the day, that's what makes us sort of most effective at our job. On the flip side, it's not like a single person show. We have teams of people that are in our regulatory department, in our legal department, in our product safety department, and we do this sort of cross-functionally. So when we don't know the answers to those things, we have other people to sort of rely on and ask the questions to.
Interesting. Tell me a little bit about what your average day is like. Like, what happens when you get to work? What time do you go?
I try to be to work before 8 o'clock because oftentimes my meetings start right away at 8 a.m. So I try to kind of get in, get my computer going, settle in a little bit, read through any emails that have populated since the night before, and get ready for the day. My day is usually just meeting after meeting after meeting is pretty much how it rolls. If I have any downtime whatsoever, I'm in a wing with the, I have four people that report to me, and two of those people are in Neenah, and they oftentimes will just stop in and ask questions, or I will also go down to my co-leader's office, and we have a lot of impromptu conversations throughout the day as well. So meetings are kind of about anything from study design to ongoing studies to, you know, management types of things, how to deal with any sort of challenges that are coming up or resourcing issues that are coming up, how we can make improvements to our teams. I get a fair number of inquiries throughout the day on just general questions. One of our, we kind of wear within our team three different hats. We have three different functions. One is what I had been describing before, which is all about clinical studies and designing those. Another function that we have is what we call more of a governance function, which is when I explained that there was four different testing teams within our corporation. There's probably over 1,000 studies a year that get conducted at Casey. Our team really only probably does a dozen, maybe, in a given year. So these other teams are producing tons of studies at a time globally. And one of our functions is to ensure that we are conducting all research in an ethical manner and in compliance with the regulations around the world. So this is a relatively new function for our team. Within the last few years, we've had to develop policies for the corporation, how things are done, what are the requirements for doing different types of studies. So a lot of my time is still spent on fielding questions about that from other teams. So not directly on studies that we handle, but there's a study that's going to be done in another country, and they have questions about how they should be consenting people, or questions about whether or not they have to abide by certain parts of the policy that are written. Can they, have an exception for different parts, that type of thing. So I spend a significant amount of time kind of doing that for the corporation as well. And then the third part that I didn't talk about is our medical group. So we have a medical director on our team, and also someone that reports to her. And they handle not only the medical aspects of the studies that we do, but again, anytime that if there's complaints that come in from commercial products that they need to address, they do medical assessments for those things. So that doesn't interact. I don't interact too much on that particular piece. But it's just another function of our team overall.
Wow, that's a lot. For your meetings, I know that you work with a lot of people in other offices and stuff like that. Are you regularly in your meetings, meeting with people that are not physically in the same room, or?
Yes. I would say probably about 50% of the time I'm in meetings remotely. I'll maybe calling in from my office. I would say probably 90% of the times our meetings are involve people from different locations. But sometimes we get half of the team together in a meeting room, and then we'll all call in so we can be in a room together. We'll call in, or we'll video conference with other people. Very rarely nowadays do you have a meeting where everybody's physically in the same room together.
Yeah. And you travel, you do a fair amount of travel in your, or you have at different times in your tenure there. You go most often down to Atlanta, right?
Yes. Yeah, we have a research, I'll say research hub in Roswell, Georgia, that is also where the other half of the Global Clinical Affairs team resides. We are pretty split between the two locations in Neenah and in Roswell. So I have people that report to me that are there in Roswell. The businesses that are in Roswell are the Casey Professional Business. They do their research there. There's also a group called Global Nonwovens that's, they are more around the different types of materials that we use that will be used by multiple, business units. So they're a corporate sort of development group. They reside there as well. And our healthcare group used to reside there, but they were recently spun off. So that's kind of a newer thing for us in the last year.
Hmm. And you've also, you've done a fair amount of, or just of international travel as well. Where all have you gone internationally?
I've been to Germany a few times, Korea, Singapore, England,
Toronto.
Yes. Yeah. Those are probably the, I think those are the main places that I've been, where, that I can think of right now.
And when you go to all those places, is business, the business that you're involved in, conducted in English, or do you have to have a translator, or?
It is, mostly in English, or we'll have somebody present that will translate. But so when we go to Korea, we have another hub in Korea. So those are KC employees that we go to in a KC site. They speak English, for the most part. So, that business is all done in English. In Singapore, they speak English also. So in Germany, when I went there, it was going to a place that was conducting studies for us. So not a KC site, but a test facility where we were doing the research. And again, they pretty much anybody we're doing business with, we have to do it in English because I don't speak any other languages, and neither does half of our team. So it's pretty common that we have to have somebody who speaks English in each of those regions in order to conduct the business. Mm.
Colombia, too.
That's the Colombia, other. Yes, that's right. That's the other place that I haven't gone. And that is a KC facility in Colombia as well.
Got it. So you've been to three other continents.
Yes.
As part of this job.
Hoping for Australia soon.
Yeah, there you go. Good. Do you like traveling?
I do. I like to travel. I don't like to do it, you know, 50% of the time, but right. In general, I like to travel.
Mm-hmm. What do you do during your downtime when you're traveling? Like, how do you spend those time in the airports or wherever, or in your hotel at night? What do you do with that time?
It depends on how far behind I feel like I am. Sometimes I work. I actually try not to. I find that I feel better going into my business if I'm not, you know, focusing on work the entire time that I'm traveling. The last trip, I just got back from a trip. I had told somebody I'll read that protocol on the plane and give you the feedback. And that's exactly what I did. Sat on the plane and, you know, read a 40-page document before I got there so that I could go into the next day and give them the feedback I needed to give them. So sometimes I do that. In the hotels, watch TV, read. I have gotten, I don't know if I'd call it into a habit, but I do sometimes call if we're reading books together with the kids, I will actually call while I'm sitting in the hotel rooms and read a chapter. So I'll bring the book with me and then call home and read them a chapter over the phone.
Oh, that's lovely. This is a dramatic shift, but what do you do for lunch every day? Do you go out to lunch? Do you eat it? Do you
bring your Sometimes lunch? I do not eat lunch. Uh-huh. many days it's hard to work lunch in. I have like meetings back to back and I struggle with that. I do not bring lunch. I don't seem to have time to do that. We have a cafeteria, so if I'm in my office, we have a cafeteria. I'll run down and get something when I can, if it's open. If I have a break in that window, between 11 and 1, I'll go to the cafeteria and grab something and go back to my office, and we'll eat while I'm working. I also, sometimes it's after 1 o'clock. A lot of times it's after 1 o'clock when I finally get a break. And so I take advantage of that and leave the campus and go someplace and just get something to go, or kind of take a little break from my day and, drive somewhere and get lunch.
And what time do you usually leave for the day?
Between 5 and 6.
How long have you been there?
15 years.
15 years. Wow. What's the best thing about your job?
The best thing about my job. I would say just over the 15 years, really getting a wide breadth of understanding of the different businesses. I think within KC, there's not a ton of people that can kind of say they've had as much interaction across all of the business units. So being able to say I have supported every single one of them in some capacity in my career is kind of, it's rewarding. It's good to know that you have a kind of a good understanding of a very complex organization and how it operates. And then on top of that, most recently, learning about those pieces internationally. So that's also quite challenging to kind of understand and see, how does this function in another country? And it's always different than you think it's going to be. So I do enjoy just learning, a lot of the internal pieces when you have a company with 50,000 people and they just do things differently all over the world, and not necessarily right or wrong, but you're constantly learning something new, and so I think I like that.
It's really interesting. What's the most challenging thing about your job?
Probably twofold. I find it very challenging. I've never been too excited, honestly, to be a manager and have people report to me. So I think that piece is very challenging to me. Just I'm not all that excited about dealing with a lot of drama. Mm-hmm. It's not definitely not my favorite part. The other piece that's challenging is when I talked about the policy side of our role. It's not popular, so people do not, you feel like you're policing things a lot. And that is very challenging. People are pushing back a lot, very resistant to sort of what you're doing. And you have to be able to make it make sense for them. And sometimes that's really difficult. It's easy to say, we don't deal in very risky products. Why on earth does, you know, this is a diaper. Why do I have to go through X, Y, and Z to test a product that's used by, you know, billions of people around the world every day? So being able to convince people about some of the pieces that they have to sort of comply with and helping them understand why it's important, certain steps that we put in place, sometimes they just never really appreciate that. And you just have to be able to say, well, I think we're doing the right thing regardless of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was your schooling in? What are your degrees?
I have, my undergraduate was in psychology and in human biology. And then my master's degree was in, biology with a microbiology emphasis. Mm-hmm. And, then a year and a half in my master's for social work. Uh-huh. Which I use more than I kind of wish I would have finished it just for my management job.
Why? Talk about that.
Well, I think there's just so much of the dynamics of working with people and different personalities. And our particular team has had just so much change, and we have a lot of very different personalities on our team. And like I said, more drama than I wish that we had. And it's, a lot of it is looking at the different individuals in the social context that we're in the organization, and how to help somebody be successful. And I do think that a lot of those skills are useful in that context.
Do you think there are things about you at work that would surprise people that know you from outside of work?
I don't know. I can be just as opinionated at work as I can be at home. So I don't know if there's anything particularly surprising, I guess, about me at work. I think it's always fascinating to think about other people at work and just what do they do and how do they interact in their, in their dealings. But I don't know if it'd be anything terribly, terribly surprising. Uh-huh.
Do you, are there things from growing up or from your own family background that you think have been important to you to bring into your career or that you utilize in your work life?
That's an interesting question. I think that your experience, yes, and in a number of different ways. First of all, I mean, your experience growing up, it just is how your personality develops. So I am who I am because of the way I was brought up and the people that I interacted with. And I think that in some ways, people at work, when I get feedback from people at work, it's very interesting. Some people think that I come across very harsh, and then others just say, you're so diplomatic. So I'm like, that seems like just such a, you know, weird, you know, kind of weird. To me, that's contradictory sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I think I am both of those things. And I think about the diplomatic part just maybe comes from being in such a large family and knowing you don't always get your way. And maybe that's where the strong-willed part also comes from, and having to live with 9 people and demanding your attention sometimes as you need it. So I don't know. The other flip side to that, I guess, that I would say is just – I think I'm forever grateful for everything that I have had growing up, and being able to see when I interact with people, particularly on the management side, I have folks that have had very different lives than mine, and to really understand where they're coming from and where they have been, I'm always reminded of how fortunate I have been in being in the family that I'm in the environment that I'm in, and how I think that helps me be more productive at work, definitely have a strong work ethic. And I think that sometimes when people are less successful at work, if you kind of learn more about their own background and where they came from, you learn a lot about how that could influence who they are as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Let's see how many previous jobs that you've had can you name?
Probably my first job, which I'm not sure I was really paid for, was helping with Bob Standard doing some of their monthly invoicing. We used to, when I was pretty young, we used to help Bobby Doms and I used to put together all of the invoices for people who had credit there. It was a big thing back when we were growing up. So we would do a lot of the book work for that.
Did you do that at their house or at the gas station?
Oh. At their house. They had an office at their house, uh-huh. And we would just get tons of these little, you know, carbon copy pieces of paper that we would have to go through for any given at a business or individual who was just, you know, had a monthly credit going, and work through their bills for the month.
Credit for gas?
Yeah. Wow. Or anything else. So they'd come in and they would write up a slip and it would go on their account. And then we would reconcile the accounts at the end and give them a monthly statement.
Oh, so interesting.
That was probably my first job. Like I said, I'm not really sure I was ever paid for it, but we did it. And then the grocery store, Cops, did that for many years in high school, throughout high school.
Checker?
Checker. Yeah, thanks. And then I think probably Mary's as a waitress for several years. And I guess I can't think of any. Oh, Anchor Foods. Mm-hmm. And worked at Anchor Foods in the quality control department, and then in doing quality assurance, which was the microbiology piece, which is, you know, when I went back to school for that.
Did you work in the Twin Cities at all when you were there? Did you have any?
I don't think so. I don't recall working there.
Mm-hmm. You've had a number of internships and different things at different. Oh, and you worked at Hilltop, is that what it was called?
Oh, yeah.
In that other restaurant, Stevens Point.
No, that was not. It wasn't Hilltop. It was that little Greek restaurant. Yeah. I think I try to block that out. That was my scariest job, I think. The guy who ran that really, really scared me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Had some of those. But you've also had a number of internships and things as part of your very different schooling along the way.
I am trying to remember. The most notable is in the social work, which is was in the Center for Grieving Children in Appleton, mm-hmm. which was most recent. And that was very fascinating, and I loved that internship very much. I still volunteer there. And that it was all about group support, peer support for kids who have lost a loved one, whether it's a parent. Well, most often it's a parent, but not always a parent or a sibling. And twice a month they can come for a family night, and we break into groups. We have dinner together, and then we break into age appropriate groups and do an activity, helping to you know, deal with grief in some way, or remember their loved one in some way. And then, we get back together and have a little gym time so they can just kind of decompress in the gym and then come back together as a full group with all the parents and everything and do a closing ceremony. So my internship was about sort of those preparing for those nights and helping to, figure out what those activities were going to be, how, what we were going to concentrate on that week, thinking about the different kids who were going to potentially be there and what their different needs are. So oftentimes things would have to be adjusted based on what their situation was. Some of the kids had pretty traumatic, experiences, where someone would, you know, was murdered or, you know, things like that. And so we had to always think about what is this child going to be processing during this and how do we make it so that it's not something that's traumatic for them to go through, but helpful. And so we'd have to think about that. And there were other kids with special needs that we would also have to think about how to address, address their needs as well. So that was my favorite internship. we did the same type of thing, not with kids who had, through the Boys and Girls Club, not with kids who had necessarily lost a loved one, but who had experienced some other form of loss. For example, divorce or a parent going to jail or a pet that died or, you know, kind of just how to deal with change and loss. And, that was, also very fascinating work, in understanding, what those kids were going through at pretty young ages and helping them, giving them decent coping skills to sort of deal with change and loss.
Excellent. So. All right.
All right.
Thank you.